Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
Yes, and after being away last week, our Justice Minister Andrew Little joined me this morning and we discussed quite a lot of recent government announcements, and we started by making New Zealand history a compulsory subject at schools.
Look, this is long overdue, and I know in my role as Minister of Treaty Negotiations, I get to see what we call the historical accounts. Every treaty settlement with an iwi is part of it. There's this agreed historical account. It's a piece of scholarship worked on by both iwi representatives, or iwi historians, and Crown historians. And it tells the story of that particular iwi and what happened down the ages to them. In some cases, it deals with the wars that were carried out and the colonial troops attacking Marae and what have you. So I've started to build up a picture of events that I know and not many New Zealanders know about. And so the more opportunity we get to tell the story of New Zealand and acknowledge it, then it means that as a country we can face the future with a greater degree of confidence, because it's based on a shared understanding of our history.
Another big government announcement for the past week has to be on mental health. So this isn't part of your portfolio, but are you confident that these new initiatives can bring down New Zealand's suicide rates?
Yeah, I can. What we've specifically announced this week is a suicide prevention strategy, and having a dedicated resource within the Ministry of Health, the Office of Suicide Prevention, to lead that strategy and to monitor initiatives that are being taken and to monitor what they are achieving. We know that look, suicide is we have a very high incidence of suicide, and when you look at where it's striking most, it's young men, it's older men, it's Māori and Pacifica. So we need to be putting a real focus on this in a way that we haven't before. We know that mental health and sort of depression treatment services have been run down over many years, and this government made a commitment that we would put that right. We made a significant investment in this year's budget to do that over the next 4 years with more services, more treatment centres, dealing with addiction, putting more money into that. And part of that is also then dealing with those whose situation and mental health is such that you know, they can't contemplate suicide. So the more we can do to educate about that, understand it, and support anybody and whānau, family and whānau of people going through through that sort of depression, then the better we will do and the better chance we have of reducing our dreadful suicide statistics.
And because we were on youth suicide rates, I see these new initiatives seem to be only on the national level and with district health boards. And because youth suicide rates are going up, why aren't these new measures targeting schools?
Oh, no, they will. And there is, I mean, part of the suicide prevention plan involves what we do at the school level. So we've already started an initiative, actually, that started in Canterbury following the earthquakes, of putting professional help within schools, and, you know, whether it's through social workers, trained counsellors, and making services and treatment much easier to access. We know that for a lot of people, their first port of call is their GP, and making it easier to go from your GP, or first of all, supporting GPs to understand symptoms, and then making it easier for GPs to refer people to counselling. And a lot of it is talk therapy. It's not about medicines and pharmaceuticals and drugs. It is about giving people the chance just to talk through what it is, the challenges that they're going through. So all of that is in the plan. That's what the Suicide Prevention Office we'll be monitoring. But what, you know, making it easier for young people to get access to support and help, starting with the schools, is absolutely a vital part of that.
Speaking of GP visits, the National Party has said some of these initiatives are nothing new because they only covered the cost of existing mental health provision and GPs and PHOs. What's your response to that?
Well, they've just got it completely wrong. We know one of the reasons why we've made the significant investment, and it had to be a significant investment, in mental health and addiction services is that the workforce has been run down. The number of counsellors and other professionals who are available to do the work, we just don't have enough. So you know, one of the priority initiatives is building the workforce that is needed to meet, you know, to meet current needs, and that's more counsellors, more psychologists, more psychiatrists. And look, some of them we can get from overseas, but actually, you know, when we're dealing particularly in Māori communities and Pacific communities, we need people who are steeped in their worlds, who are able to provide counselling and support and help in a way that is, you know, culturally relevant to them. So building the workforce is a priority task. And look, it's easy for the National Party to say there's no new ideas. The reality is that none of these ideas have been backed and resourced in the past in the way that this government is doing.
Moving on to an ongoing issue in your portfolio, now your bill that decriminalises abortion is now in select committee stage in Parliament. So what's the current progress?
Look, as far as I know, it's making good progress. The deadline for submissions hasn't closed, but the committee, and it's a specialist select committee, is already hearing from people, and they heard from the Abortion Supervisory Committee. No, they heard from the Law Commission this week, and the Law Commission was the one that prepared the report for me last year on how to shift abortion from the criminal framework that it sits in at the moment to a health framework. And they pretty much laid out to the committee what they set out in the report and said sort of where the challenges were. So there was nothing particularly new there. But it is the basis on which the current proposed law is being debated. It's very much based on what the Law Commission said in their report, but with a few amendments that means that, you know, we have got the level of support that we've got in the House. So look, what the Select Committee does is a very important part of the process. There'll be a lot of people who will want to have their say, and they'll have the chance to do that over the next few months. I'm not expecting the Select Committee to report back to Parliament until early next year. So I would say February, March next year, before the next major step by Parliament is taken.
Regardless of what the Select Committee reports back to Parliament, are you still confident that you can get your coalition partner, New Zealand First, to support this bill?
I don't take anything for granted. And although I think the first reading passed with a pretty good margin, there's no guarantee that that will continue. And in fact, I expect that number to reduce. But look, every party is represented on the Select Committee. And I think there's good dialogue between the parties. I continue to have good dialogue with the Green Party, with New Zealand First, and with the National Party about it. And I think, you know, I think the committee will do a good job. They do want to hear from New Zealanders, and I'm sure there will be changes to the bill, and those changes will be necessary to make it effective and to make it work. But at the moment, you know, there's a good foundation for them to do that work and to have that debate. And in the end, you know, it's a debate that every New Zealander needs to have.
Right. National leader Simon Bridges, he has recently went to China and met with a state councillor who's in charge of Chinese state security, as well as having an interview with Chinese state media, which he praised the Chinese Communist Party. So what is your reaction to this?
I certainly think the meeting with the chap who's politically responsible for the state security services was an unusual meeting to have.
Do you think it is appropriate?
Well, I'm not sure that it is. I mean, when I was leader of the opposition, I did a visit to China. I met the vice president. I met a number of people. But I didn't. I wasn't offered, and I wouldn't have accepted an opportunity to meet the head of the security services. It's not the right thing for a senior politician from another country to do. So I thought that was unusual. Look, Chinese media are interested in New Zealand. He gave an interview to a Chinese TV station. And everybody speaks very carefully in those sorts of interviews. I think he did that. But he did seem very enthusiastic about the Chinese Communist Party. I think most people try to maintain at least the technical distinction between the Chinese Communist Party and the government, the People's Republic of Chinese government, But the way the language he used seems to salute the Communist Party, which at a political level is, I guess, is one thing. But in the end, we engage with the state, with the country, as opposed to the political parties within it.
Coming back closer to home, because you are the minister of the SIS and GCSB, do you think China is now influencing New Zealand politics?
Look, I know that our agencies have expressed concern that there is a risk of that, and I think it's a risk that applies in many other countries too. And I think, you know, that is often expressed through donations, political party donations, and often channeled through New Zealand registered companies. That's the one of the real risks that they pointed out in their comments to the Select Committee recently, and that's something that I think I think all political parties in New Zealand want Parliament to deal with. I know the Select Committee has had some advice about that. I'm getting advice from officials about what we can do, what we need to do to tighten up our laws. Look, these things are a risk. Whether it's happening in fact, it's always difficult to detect, and I think the most important thing we can do is to make sure that our systems and procedures and our laws are as tight as possible to make sure that the risk of foreign interference and foreign influence is as low as possible.
You once said you need a burner phone for when you go to China. So does that mean New Zealanders' privacy are under threat if they are in China right now?
I'm not sure I said that. I was asked whether I had taken any precautions on my trip to China. And I said that I had followed advice to take a burner phone, which I did. And that is just, if you're a senior politician from any country, look, there is always a chance that you may be the target of those who want to, you know, listen to what you're saying and doing. That is just a reality.
Regardless, do you think it is time that we need to look into our policies on foreign interference?
I think we definitely need to be alert to the possibility of it happening, and it's not. I don't think the risks of foreign interference are confined to a single country. I think there are others, and I think there are other forms of influence that can be played out. But I think we do need to be alert to that, and that's why, you know, having maximum transparency about, you know, what politicians, especially ministers, you know, what is in our diaries, who we're meeting with, I think that is important, and that's why this government initiated the policy of proactive diary releases, so people do get to see who we're meeting with, who we're interacting with on a daily basis.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.